very brave today, and it's nothing to do with cold showers, although I am still doing cold showers, and a couple of my friends are now doing cold showers, and they keep asking me about, is 10 seconds long enough, is 20 seconds long enough, seeing as though all of that is longer than me, I say it's absolutely marvellous. So it's not the cold showers, that's kind of, it's becoming part of, I think, my morning routine. I organised to have a play date, so a couple of the boys' friends over here, so this is Christmas week, everywhere's kind of a mess, lots to do, and I had a four-year-old and a six-year-old come and play with my 2 6-year-olds, and it was, you know, there's a double-edged sword to play dates, which you'll find out. It's great because you're going to get to catch up with a friend, so you have a little chat, it's nice, and the boys, your children, get to play with their friends, but the chaos and the destruction is like, not, I'm actually sitting in the boys' playroom now, and it's just the destruction that they leave. Who would have thought that children, just four of them, could create that much mess? It's been quite a morning, I would say.
Wow. Well, I'm quite lucky when it comes to mess. At the moment, the baby Fernando, his favourite thing is putting things away. He likes putting things in things, especially back where they belong. So we have this situation where I went to soft play with the baby, not my own.
Him. Well,
but then I'm sort of tipping stuff out and he's putting it all back in, and I'm thinking this is the wrong way around, what are you doing? So I'm sort of chucking all the balls out of the ball pit and he's going, no mummy, and putting them back in. So I guess I should enjoy it. He enjoys tidying up.
Well, how quickly can you and baby Fernando get round here, because I have this room that needs tidying, and mine never went through that phase, never had that phase.
Oh, if there's anything that looks like you can put something in it, he'll put it in it. So if you had like mess all over the floor and then like a big box, a big toy box, oh, just give him 10 minutes. It'll be crystal. It'll just be perfectly clean. It'll be amazing.
That is unbelievable. That is. No,
maybe I can make some money out of him. Hire a tidying baby.
Can you imagine? He could just scuttle along on his hands and knees, just tidying things up. He'd just be like a moving human Hoover.
Yeah, like what are those Roombas? The Roombas, the robots. Is that right?
What's
the
Roomba?
Robot Hoovers? Are they Roombas?
I don't know what you're talking about.
I might have genuinely made that up. Don't know. The round robots that just hoover on their own?
No.
You just say go and they just hoover the room on their own. What are you talking about? Are you living in 1995?
What are you talking about? What are you talking about? A Roomba? What is a Roomba?
A robot Hoover. Have you not seen a robot Hoover?
My Hoover needs me to make it work and function and tidy things up.
There are Hoovers where you just say go and it just roams around and it hoovers around. Yeah, and it sees obstacles and it gets out of the way. It changes settings if it goes on a carpet or hard or whatever. Yeah, you just press go and that's it, off it goes.
Do you have one?
No, but how have you not heard of this? Honestly, you're living in a different decade.
There are genuinely people listening to this who have not heard of a Roomba. If you'd said to
that
me,
is not
you,
true.
No, if you I'm, just
people
if you,
don't let me down here. That is not true.
No, if you just said to me, or if there was a quiz and they said, you know, one of these on the quiz show for £50,000 or dollars, what is a Roomba? You know, A, B, or C. I'm not picking Hoover. I don't know what I'm picking.
Well, Roomba's like a brand name, but you know what I mean. The round ones, and they just
I do not know what you mean. I don't.
That
have,
is that's poor.
To be honest,
I'm disappointed.
To be honest, A, I'm not very good with technology, but B, there are so many obstacles in our house. I don't even think a Roomba would function in our house.
Well, they're very smart, so maybe it's worth a try.
Maybe you can get it for me for my birthday present. Christmas present?
Yeah. Well,
are they expensive?
Quite a while to your birthday, because you've just had one.
Yeah, that's true. Christmas is in 4 days' time. I think, well, yeah.
I'm not sure if I can get there in time, but there you go. I can't believe this. This is madness.
I've never heard of it. I don't think it's unusual that I don't know that there's a round thing that you say go to and it hoovers your house.
Yeah, that's it.
I don't think, and I guarantee there are people listening who have never heard of what you are talking about.
No way. No way, honestly.
100%. 100%.
If anybody does write in and say that, you're just trying to make Gigi feel better. I do not believe you.
The awful thing is that the next, I don't know, 5 or 10 people I see in the next couple of days, I'm just going to ask them if they've heard of these things. And I'm going to do my own little poll around where I live. Well, I have learnt something new in the podcast, at this early stage of the podcast. So thank you very much for that. In terms of the tennis world, COVID. A lot of COVID headlines in the last few days.
It's a shame. But, I mean, it's happening everywhere, isn't it? It's every sport. It's not just sport, just everywhere. But Abu Dhabi, the exhibition there, getting hit hard. We thought it was disappointing because last time we were talking about how Emma Raducanu wasn't going to be able to play because she got COVID when she arrived there. And it turns out that everybody else got it too. So whether they got it whilst they were still there or when they travelled home, regardless, it was a bit of an outbreak and a bit of a bummer.
Hopefully, and I know Belinda Bencic talked about the uncomfortable symptoms that she was getting, and she started a statement saying, I'm fully vaccinated. Unfortunately, I've contracted or tested positive for COVID. The symptoms aren't that great. And I think Ange Jabeur said a very similar thing. I think she's the latest player and obviously referenced. I think Carlos Moya, he's also got it as well. I think I saw a message say that he's got it too. So the first thing is wish them a speedy recovery. On the flip side, if I'm trying to find a positive, it would be that they should be clear and all fine for Australia. But then the other side of the thing is what you brought up last week with regards to Emma Raducanu. And for someone like Rafa Nadal, this could have a bearing because he's been out for so long anyway, is that they will now miss a precious amount of pre-season time.
Yeah, can't train.
Yeah.
Or if you have a court in your back garden, could you train on that? I suppose you could, but you wouldn't be able to practice with anyone because you should be isolating. So you could set up a ball machine on your own. You could play away like that, I suppose.
But then if you live in a house, the people you live in a house with, because I know the rules in the UK, if someone has COVID, the people in the house can still go out and about. They take a lateral flow every day, so they can still go out and about. So if Nadal, who quite possibly has one or two tennis courts in the vicinity of where he lives, he could still practice with someone as long as there's someone from his house / bubble.
Yeah, right? I'm not sure how good his wife is at tennis, to be honest. Maybe not Nadal's standards of practice partner. If the ball comes back, that's all you can ask, I suppose.
But I guess you could do other stuff because a lot of pre-season, isn't it? It's not always with a ball, is it? It might be stuff in the gym or other bits and pieces that you're doing. So depending on the severity of the symptoms, because as we know, it can completely wipe you out. There might be, it's not like Emma Raducanu, who I think was she in a hotel room. So it depends where you get it and where you're stuck and where you're going to be. If Rafa Nadal tested positive when he got home, so hopefully he was able to go home, there will be space and it won't be as restricting. So I guess it kind of depends. And I think Ange Jabeur is back in Tunisia, so hopefully they've got a little bit of space so they're not too isolated. And hopefully, I know Rafa Nadal is... There were question marks, I think, about Australia before he tested positive just because he hasn't played in so long.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, look, if you're going to test positive, you want to test positive at home, don't you? So that you can be... I think everybody wants to be at home rather than in a hotel. So... just a bit of, it's a shame for the event, which I think on the whole was successful until we obviously get these sorts of results coming back. And it's one of those things like sports around the world are just sort of ploughing on this time rather than last time where everything stopped. It really is just people saying we can't afford to stop, so we're just going to keep going. And the governments aren't shutting these things down. And it's just about the rules and the regulations. It's like with Australia, you know, things are evolving all the time. You know, they're going to plough on regardless. They sort of have to. So it's very different to where we were, say, sort of, summer-ish of 2020, where everything had stopped, really. It's a good thing, I suppose, that the events are continuing on. I don't really know if it's a smart thing or not. It just, I don't know. I'm not a scientist. But it is amazing.
It is. I know football in this country from Boxing Day. So that's the 26th of December. Wales football goes behind closed doors. Scotland, it's a maximum of 500 spectators. So it's pretty much behind closed doors. And as things stand in the UK, it's as normal, but we've been told that there could possibly be restrictions, guidelines that are brought in terms of, I mean, one number from the Premier League in a week, their positive cases, this is the football, the soccer, the Premier League, is their numbers have doubled in a week in terms of positive cases. They're up to, I think, 90 for players. Yeah. And
there's been a lot of cancellations, right? Is that right?
Yeah.
I think they can't get teams out because everybody's isolating. Yeah.
Six of the matches were called off during the week, and then they had a meeting of the Premier League clubs. And I think someone made a really good point. The assistant manager at Liverpool said, it's all very well for the Premier League clubs and the chairman and the chairwomen to get together and say, we don't want this, we're going to carry on. He said, but they're not scientists. They're not the people who are seeing the effect that this virus has on people. They're not thinking about, in a sense, you know, the welfare and how it's affecting the bodies and how we expect these players to recover and play two matches in 4 days because over the festive period it's so busy. And they came to the conclusion that if you've got 13 available players, you're on, you're in, you will play. You know, as long as you've got 13 players from which to choose from, then you should fulfill your matches, fulfill your fixtures.
Well, that's sort of how I feel like with Abu Dhabi stuff. Like, it's great that all this stuff is going on. I'm enjoying watching it and stuff. But there is a part of me that's a bit like, I don't know if this really should be going on. It's not being decided by scientists anymore, is it? It's being decided by people who are running the events. And it's no surprise that they're all going ahead. But when you look at the numbers of, you know, the players impacted in other sports, in team sports, and obviously tennis has wound down for a bit as this variant of the virus has cranked up. You know, you start thinking, you know, will this have a huge impact on Australian Open? Because, yeah, for those players who've just got it, that might be like, oh, excellent, Australia's going to be fine then because I'll be recovered and off I go. I know I'll be fine to go and play. But, it does feel like there are going to be a chunk of positive tests because it's just everywhere now. I mean, I live in London and in London it is just everywhere. I think they basically are saying like, yeah, you live in London, you're going to get it at some point over the next month or so.
I've never known so many people to have it. I think in the first wave, I mean, I had it, but I didn't really know that many people, maybe a couple of others. And then I don't know which wave we're in, but then the second wave, I don't think I knew many. But this time, everybody you speak to, you'll get calls saying, yep, the whole family has it. I did a show last night on Five Live. One of my guests was isolating at home with it, felt absolutely fine, but has it. Another friend of ours actually called me today. He's just come through it. And luckily, he's been symptom free, but it's absolutely everywhere. And we've been playing it very carefully so we can be with loved ones on Christmas Day, because I have parents who are vulnerable. So we've been very, very careful. But you do worry. And from a work perspective, I guess in the freelance world, you really worry because if you get it, you lose work. It's like a player who gets it and misses a tournament. So it's, we've, you know, done everything we can possibly do to protect ourselves from it. But despite that, yeah, it's everywhere. I mean, it's everybody you speak to. We had a guy who was collecting a delivery today and he said from the 20 houses he had been to picking things up and delivering things, 16 of them had people in the house with COVID.
Wow. Yeah.
And he was knocking on the door. There was a voice behind the door going, just leave it. I can't come out.
He said it
was nearly, look, 16 of the 20 houses he went to, people had. I mean, yeah. It's miserable. It's everywhere. So everyone's just gotta take care because it's out there and it's everyone. I don't think it's going away anytime soon. I think had a very interesting conversation last night. We talk about football and team sports because we've noticed this in tennis, haven't we, through the pandemic, the effect it's taken on players, whether the likes of Gilles Simon stepped away from tennis for a bit and Tsitsipas and Shapovalov were quite vocal and Andreescu recently talked about the toll it's taken with the bubbles and the travelling and the isolation. And I think sometimes people don't think about that in with regards to team sports that, oh, well, there's, say, football, there's 11. So they're going to be fine. But those 11, they're still individuals who have vulnerable relatives who are still having to stay in bubbles, who are still having to put their health at risk. And it seems to be that in team sport world, as long as we can get 11 players out on the pitch, it's fine. And it doesn't seem we think about the effect it could have basically on their mental health quite as much.
Yeah, I think so. It's been really, really tough. We've had quite a few tennis players talk about it, about how difficult it has been and just how taxing it is. Yeah, and on their team members as well. You know, we saw Barty wrap up her year early and say, "Poof, God, I'm done." I mean, she did pretty well, so she was like, "I'll take it. I'll take my second Grand Slam title, my world number one ranking, and I'm going to go and chill out in Australia." And you know what? 100% the right decision. You know, you deserve to do that. You should do that. And she's not the only one. So, yeah, no, it's tough. I don't know how they've managed it, to be honest. The level of tennis that we've seen has been sensational. I think we really have had a year. I know we're going to do some reflections on the year, but we really have had a year full of youngsters, like real youngsters. And I don't know whether that is part of it as well, in that the slightly older players are, you know, finding it more difficult with the restrictions and the bubbles and all that sort of stuff to find their best tennis. Whereas the youngsters, I mean, they just don't care. They just want to play. They just want to get out there. They're just desperate. They're chomping at the bit. They've been waiting to be on the tour for so long, and they're just ready. And whether, you know, and for some of them, especially the ones who were sort of outside the top 100 before the year started, there weren't really many tournaments they could play, to be honest. They had best part of a year where they were really, really struggling. So yeah, it has really felt like that sort of, those players who are fresh to the tour have really, really thrived. And there have been some sort of tired looking, more experienced players, I think possibly just because of, the restrictions that, you know, that have been in place. Like, I don't know. I don't know how they've done it. They must love tennis. That's all I can say. It's, I know they're staying in nice places and they fly nice as well. Like, I don't feel like it's a particular hardship in comparison to what an awful lot of people have gone through with this pandemic. However, it's just to be able to perform the way they've performed in that sort of environment, I think it's tough.
Yeah, I think it's very, very tough. And as I say, it's everywhere at the moment. So just want people to stay safe, be sensible, and hopefully we'll all come out the other side. You mentioned reflections on the year. So this is sort of our tennis Christmas special. We're going to split it over a couple of weeks. There is no right answer. There is no wrong answer. Whether we'll agree on any answer, I don't know. But we've got 10 questions. And we're going to split this over the next couple of weeks. This is kind of our look back at the year. And we'd love people to get in touch. Do you agree? Do you disagree? Do you have a different answer? I'm going to start. You talked about Ash Barty. So let's start with your WTA Player of the Year and why. And it might not be Ash Barty, but who would you say for you in 2021 has stood above the rest and why?
It's a fascinating one, isn't it? Really, you've got the huge achievements of Barty with a very strong level of consistency. You have the weirdly, and I do say weirdly, everybody, if you followed her career, it is a weirdly consistent year from Sabalenka. Quite extraordinary. Hasn't hit the heights that Barty has hit. She hasn't been in a slam final or anything like that, but just bizarrely consistent. And I know that I'm focusing on that, the sort of the surprise in that, because you look at her game style, it doesn't suit being consistent week in, week out. And you look at her personality, it doesn't suit being consistent week in, week out. That is why she's not been consistent week in, week out throughout her career. She's had these tremendous runs, and then she's had some times where she looks like she can't win a match. But she has been so strong and almost reliable. I'm looking at draws being like, yeah, well, Sabs will be in the quarters, no worries about that. And then she does. You know, there's no, you know, she has lost early in some tournaments. Don't get me wrong, it's not every single week of the year, but, you know, number two in the world because of her consistency, not because she's won a Grand Slam. You know, like that is just sort of nicely surprising. I don't know. I just find it interesting. So you've got sort of a bit of a contrast at the top. You've got Muguruza, who's been sort of threatening to get back to her very, very best. You've obviously got Krejcikova, who's just burst onto the scene and looked like she was born to be making acceptance speeches. It was just like, I've never seen anybody produce such a shock result and then take the microphone and be like, yeah, I've planned this, and off I go. Like, when she was, that speech at the French Open was just extraordinary. I couldn't quite work out what was going on. And she was talking about Justine Henin for a period of time. It turned into a bit of a chat show vibe. It was amazing. Am I missing anyone else from the top, from the very, very top? In terms of the WTA players, let me have a look. So I've done Barty, Sabalenka, Muguruza. Look, I tell you what, Pliskova is number four in the world, above Krejcikova. Of course, you know, final of Wimbledon, but you know, we're sort of used to seeing her at the top. Her and Muguruza have both been number one. I'm not really going to consider anybody else, because there are some fantastic players below that. But you know, for Player of the Year, you know what? The thing is that I really want to sort of give it to Sabalenka, because I admire massively how she has just become this, like, yeah, I'm just world class week in, week out. That's just what I do now, which is a great effort. It's a tough game to sort of rein in a bit, and she's managed to do it. But you can't pip Ash Barty. You just can't do it. She's been fantastic. I mean, with all that pressure, and I don't think we have had a number one in the world sort of defend that number one in the world spot like Barty has managed this year, since sort of Serena, really. Because we've had a lot of number ones who have then sort of struggled. Something like Kerber, you know, up to the top and then she sort of fell away. And, you know, Muguruza up to the top and fell away. And you know, Barty's like, no, I got to the top and I have stayed at the top. And then you all thought it was because of COVID and that I didn't play. But then I came back and I just won everything and I won a Grand Slam and I won all the big tournaments and I'm still number one in the world with everybody competing. So, you know, to me that has been impressive. I suppose, you know, Osaka, of course, has been, she was number one for quite a while. It was very Grand Slam based. I don't know. I'm rambling now. Ash Barty, congratulations.
I loved hearing all that. I knew where you were going to end up and knew what you were going to come back to. And I think for me, this is when I'm going to get all the people messaging going, what have you got against Ash Barty? Nothing. I have nothing against Ash Barty. I think she's amazing. I think she's done wonderful things. But Barbora Krejcikova, I'm going to give her Player of the Year because it's astonishing.
What? She's number five in the world. Just
Player of the Year.
Player of the Year.
Then these are pointless questions, because we should have just said, okay, it's Djokovic.
No.
It's Djokovic and Barty, and let's move on. I do not think that being number one means you are the Player of the Year necessarily. I think it's like the GOAT debate, isn't it? Is the GOAT debate ultimately decided on titles, or do you put personality in and do you put off-court stuff in as well? That's a debate that will rage. And I think the same for this. I don't think, of course, the person who is number one in the world is going to have a very good argument, but I look at what she did. It was astonishing. It was truly astonishing what she did. And she kept going. And she stayed up there. And she kept playing. And she went through the Olympics and the Billie Jean King Cup finals until she was dead on her feet by the end, absolutely exhausted. But I just think what Krejcikova did was incredible. And if I could give it to them jointly, and I know, and again, it's nothing against Ash Barty. What she did was, she had to be away from home for so long to back it up, to stay at number one, to win that Wimbledon title. It's exceptional how she's been playing. But Krejcikova, no one would have guessed it. No one would have predicted it. No one would have put money on it. No one would have backed her to do what she has done. And then just to stay up there and to keep going and to move through into Tokyo, move through to the end of the season. And I just think what she's done, I think it's astonishing. She effectively coming from...
Oh, it is.
Just from where she was in singles to... I just think, yeah, look, speech-wise, brilliant. I love Sabalenka. I love watching Sabalenka. I love listening to Sabalenka. I think she's done so well. And I want her to make that breakthrough. And I want her to get a Grand Slam. I want Andreescu to come back because she's one of my favourite players.
Yes.
To watch. Absolutely enjoy. I love watching Ash Barty and how she plays. And she's such a wonderful person, it seems, from what we know of her. But I just, maybe I've got a little bit of a soft spot. Maybe it's good that I'm not on the official voting panel for this, but Krejcikova, I think for me, just gets player of the year because it's, yeah, I don't know, is it a case of we should expect it from someone like Ash Barty because she was number one in the world and because she'd won a Grand Slam, but we didn't expect it of Krejcikova. I don't think anyone
Well, I
did.
Think that's fair enough. Yeah, I think you can have that as a reason, because I was saying that I wanted to give it to Sabalenka because of the element of surprise. Like, that's what was so, it was so surprising how she went about her year. So, yeah, I think that's a valid reason, and I think you've put your case forward well enough that I will accept it.
But I put my case forward. I don't know if I'm going to completely contradict myself when we do the ATP Player of the Year.
Well, you can kick off on that one then. It's you to go first. ATP Player of 2021.
I'm giving it to Novak Djokovic.
Because he's number one in the world.
Not because he's number one in the world. And I was thinking of other players. I was thinking of other players who might actually fall into a different category that we have a little bit later, and of what they've achieved. And you can make cases for a handful. But I think for me, Djokovic, it's what he was, sounds a bit weird, so close to achieving. And it's the run he went on. And he didn't play that many tournaments. You know, I think Rafa Nadal said something recently about, oh, you know, Novak played so much more than me. He didn't. He just didn't play that many tournaments. But the ones he did play, he played so well. And to be in the position he was in, going to Tokyo, and I know it crumbled in Tokyo, and it was so sad to see. And then it was heartbreaking to see him at Flushing Meadows when he was crying. And I know he can be divisive off the field, off the court. You can tell I've been back in football for a bit. and I still want to know what he's doing about Australia, because that's just annoying me now. But I just think from what he was on the verge of achieving, it's quite incredible. And with all the young guys coming through, and with all, there's a big, big chasing pack out there. I just think he's still exceptional. And I've said this before, if I had to pick a tennis player of all of them to play a set to save my life, it would be Djokovic.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've been looking at the sort of the top players and the results through the year and trying to form any sort of argument that can rival Novak. And it's just impossible because, you know, not only has... Look, you said with Ash Barty, we sort of expect it from her. Of course, we expect Djokovic to be number one at the end of the year. We expect him to be number one at the end of next year. And he is. But he faced a new challenge this year. You know, he wasn't in that pack that he had got used to. You know, he had... It took him a while, but he had figured out Federer, Nadal, as well as, say, you know, Andy... in that pack. You know, he'd been operating in that pack for a while, and he had sort of got himself to the top of it. And we knew he was, and it was just a matter of time before he caught up when it came to the slams and that sort of thing. But this was a very different year. Like, yes, he had Nadal, of course, and that match at Roland Garros, you know, was just, you know, it was an exceptional match to watch. But he was facing Medvedev and Zverev, but and not in a derogatory way, in a way that they have found their best form this year, particularly through that US hardcourt season. You know, Zverev winning the gold medal, you know, Medvedev being incredibly strong as well. And, you know, it didn't necessarily go Djokovic's way because he didn't win the gold medal and he didn't win US Open. So, you know, he did have some struggles. He didn't necessarily conquer it all, but he's still come out on top. He's still number one in the world. You know, winning all the slams he did win, three out of the four, and against sort of new and invigorated and fresher rivals, and rivals that are playing at a really incredible level as well, really, really pushing him in those situations. Of course, he's going in as the heavy favourite. Yeah, he's very experienced with, you know, being Novak Djokovic and everybody thinking that he's going to win the whole time. But, you know, I just think it was a bit of a different task this year. And ultimately, he's come out on top. And I'm just looking at the rankings now. And I mean, he's 3,000 points ahead of Daniil Medvedev at number two. You know, you win 2,000 points for a slam. Winning a slam and a Masters better than Medvedev if Medvedev had lost first round in both of those tournaments, which ain't going to happen. So, yeah. an exceptional year. And as I say, you know, you look at that top 10, seven of the top 10 are on career highs in the ATP. You've got Jannik Sinner as the youngest player across both ATP and WTA in the top 10. You know, the youngest top 10 WTA is 23, which I think is Sabalenka. And the youngest ATP is Jannik Sinner at 20. Now, it hasn't been that way around for a long time. You know, that is a young top 10 now. And as I say, it's a bunch of different faces. Novak still reigns supreme. Congratulations, Novak.
And we shall wait to see how, if and where he starts 2022. Right, moving on to question three. Most improved player, ATP or WTA, where do you land?
Oh, overall?
You can have an honourable mention, but you're actually, if you were giving an award, that has to go to one person.
It's so difficult because just like so many... There are so many. You know, immediately what springs to mind, remember we're going from 2020 player to 2021 player, would be a Hubert Hurkacz. I mean, what I think he's achieved, I mean, he won a Masters in Indian Wells. You know, he reached the semi-finals of Wimbledon. Semi-finals, right? Yeah, semi-finals of Wimbledon. Yeah, and you just look at him and you just... I mean, obviously, the way he plays is phenomenal. You don't think, like, how the hell is this guy doing as well as he's doing? But there is a part of it that you're like, okay, I didn't think he could do that. Okay, great. Like, he really has motored on well. I mean, of course, Jannik Sinner, as I say, 20 years old, into the top 10. Absolutely extraordinary, winning so many tournaments. Cam Norrie, what on earth are you doing, Cam Norrie? Winning a Masters event. It is so, so, so tough. And then I'm just going to get on my list for the women just so that I don't miss anybody. Maria Sakkari, extraordinary. I mean, Paola Badosa. I mean, are you kidding? Badosa's done unbelievably well. Jabeur. Honestly, Emma Raducanu, I mean, she's winning everything. So I'm just going to leave her out of this one just so that she cannot be involved in one topic.
Wow, how are you going to whittle that lot down?
Having mentioned Carlos Alcaraz, I don't know. I find it very difficult. I think for me, if I just take a moment and reflect on this year, the person that makes me say wow more than anything would be Paola Badosa.
Okay, yeah.
I think she's been phenomenal.
So she would get your most improved?
Oh, it's tough, isn't it? Yeah. Well, it's Badosa or Hurkacz. Maybe I'll go Hurkacz.
I feel like you've just put the award in her hand and now you've ripped it out of her grasp.
Come up to the stage, Badosa.
Actually, Hubert, where are you? Where are you? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so, do you want to, can they share it? Do you want to give them it to share then?
Well, I wasn't expecting this to be, mainly because I didn't read the question you sent, but I wasn't expecting this it to all happens. Be in one category. I'd sort of separated it out, so I hadn't put the two against each other in my mind, but Hurkacz,
it's
done.
It's interesting. The one person you didn't mention who I thought would have been a shoo-in is Aslan Karatsev. I mean,
he won it, didn't he? The ATP.
How does he
improved?
How does he not get a mention? The fella was, let alone what he was last year. He was 114 in the world in February of this year. He's 18 in the world at the end of it, with two titles, Dubai and Moscow. He also got to the final in Belgrade. He got to the semi-finals in Australia. He's won doubles titles to boot. I mean, I'm very surprised he doesn't get a mention in your list.
Is he yours?
I looked at Cam Norrie. I mean, again, what is he doing? It's astonishing what Cam Norrie has done and the belief he's had in himself, which I think is fantastic. Krejcikova is my player of the year, but also you look at most improved and I think she gets a shout for that. Badosa, I think, I love watching Badosa play. And I love that grit. She's a real ballsy style about her. And I think she's absolutely fabulous. Hubert Hurkacz, it's interesting, isn't it? I think he's done exceptionally well, but he wouldn't have been on my short list. Sinner,
interesting.
Yes, but I think for me, it's Karatsev. It's, again, the problem with me is I've just... I like a story. I like a good, you know, I like the sort of, it's almost like the rags to riches. It's the from nowhere to somewhere. And I think sometimes I think a little bit too much with my heart rather than my head. But for me, the Karatsev story, I mean, he's not a spring chicken. He's got some tennis in his legs. He was battling away on the Challenger Tour. He kept faith. And where on earth this has come from, I still don't know. But what I love about Karatsev is he has the belief in himself that he's now going to stay there. And one of those things was not taking a clothing deal, because his agent, who I think some of us at the time thought, are you mad? Was going, oh no, he's going to go a lot higher than this. We'll do it at the end of the year. We kept thinking, well, anything could happen. He could get injured. He could sully the wheels. We kept saying, so when do the Karatsev wheels come off? The wheels didn't come off. They just weren't going to come off. And the fact that he's been able to imagine doing what he did at the start by qualifying for his first Grand Slam in the Middle East, then flying to Australia, then getting through to the semi-finals, and then being able to take that and continue on. And I haven't even mentioned his silver medal in Tokyo. He gets to the final in the mix with Vesnina. I just think it's astonishing that he's been able to keep the level, keep that high level. And at the end of the year, he's a top 20 player. So I think I'm going to go with the ATP on this, and I'm going to give him I'm going to give him, the others are the honourable mentions, but he gets the award.
Fair enough.
Fair enough. Is that fair enough?
I think that's an excellent decision.
We're going to do one more in this Christmas week edition, then we're saving the rest. So this one, and the fact that you haven't read
you've got to answer first on this one, because I just did the last one. We've got to alternate.
And it's also because you haven't read the question, so you need more time to think.
No, read the question. I just didn't read it properly.
A little bit of truth in that? Okay, right, here we go. Most memorable match of 2021. And again, I'm not split it. Look, if we split everything, ATP, WTA, we'd be here for about 6 hours. So I can't...
That's fair enough.
I can't be...
Yeah, we've got stuff to do, people.
I can't be splitting them. And again, my choice... There are so many. And again, my choice comes... It was a match I worked on. It was a match I was so immersed in. It didn't get...
Grand Slam?
Didn't get the result I wanted. It's not a Grand Slam match. It's an event that happens, well, it should happen every 4 years, but it happened in the fifth year. You know where I am?
Olympics.
Paralympics. We can just sit the Olympics. It was in the Paralympics. It was the wheelchair doubles final. Gordon Reid and Alfie Hewitt against Uday and Pfeiffer. It was Reid and Hewitt looking to keep the Golden Slam dream alive. They went on to complete the Grand Slam. They won the US Open in doubles. They were looking for the Golden Slam. This was a time when Djokovic hadn't been able to do it, not getting the medal in Tokyo. We still had a handful of players within the Paralympics that could still keep that Golden Slam dream alive. Among them were Alfie Hewitt and Gordon Reid. There was the backdrop of Alfie Hewitt not knowing if this would be the last Paralympics he would compete in because of classification issues, which have been resolved, and wonderfully he can continue to compete as a professional tennis player. It was like these guys, the four of these guys know each other so well. Nicholas Pfeiffer, Stefan Uday, Gordon Reid, Alfie Hewitt. And it was an absolute thriller. 3 hours and 25 minutes. And it was the French pair who came through, but the Brits were leading 3-1 in the deciding set. It had everything. It had drama. You know, the one thing it didn't have was a crowd. I know there's been so many matches when we've said, if only there was a crowd. Oh, if there'd been a crowd. It's such a wonderful stadium. We're lucky enough to go there during the Olympics. It's a wonderful arena in Tokyo. There were no fans in there, but it was gripping. And it was the story. Could they do it? They had the lead. Is this Alfie's last ever match playing as a professional tennis player? Ah, loved it. And so that gets my vote for my match of the year.
Yeah, what a moment. As you say, just so much going into it. You're into the backstory again, aren't you? But the emotion, it's just when you know what it means, it does get you. So I think that's a fine choice.
Thank you very much. And what are you going for? Now you've had a little bit of time to think. And you've worked on an awful lot of matches in 2021. So I'm not quite sure how you're going to you're going to whittle it down. And
well,
why
this is the
how?
Difficulty because, yeah, you do a lot of matches through the year. Yeah, and trying to pick through a favourite. Now, there are two matches that jump out to me, and actually they're both WTA matches. Considering this year, I did more work on ATP matches than on WTA. But there are two matches that jump out. One that I'm not going to choose, but it is, you know, just incredibly memorable. I suppose maybe it's just personal to me. I don't think this is necessarily the most memorable match for other people, but it was Emma Raducanu taking on. Now, this is not the match that anybody would pick, I think, themselves.
Ah, no, I've got it. Let me guess. Are you?
Ooh.
No. Okay. No. Okay.
Go on. Go on. You can get it. She hasn't played many matches.
Was it the US Open? No, you're going Wimbledon.
Yeah.
You're going Wimbledon.
No, I'm going US Open.
You're going US Open?
Mm-hmm.
It's not the final?
No.
Because you would have said if it was the final.
Yeah.
It was... Bencic?
No. It was earlier on. And it was against Sara Cerebres-Tormo.
Okay.
And not the most memorable because I can't actually remember the result, but I have a feeling it was like love and one. Like one and two. Something ridiculous. But the reason it stood out to me was because, you know, going into that match, I was like, okay, this is a different challenge for Emma. This, you know, because already she was making waves. She'd come through qualies. She'd obviously done what she'd done at Wimbledon. You know, we were in the UK. I was working for a British broadcaster, working for the BBC. And obviously I know Emma. So, you know, it had all of that going for it. And it was like, okay, if she can win this one, that's sort of like, hold on, what's happening here? Because yeah. I was like, Cerebres-Tormo is tough. She's got that spinny forehand. She's got that. She's loud and in your face. The other players that Emma had played against were quite quiet and she really overwhelmed them with her sort of energy on the court. But with Cerebres-Tormo, I was like, she's not going to get overwhelmed. She's going to be giving it the come-ons, the vamos from point, like, you know, 15 all in the first game. She's, you know, vamosing as if she's won the tournament. And, you know, I was like, that just changes things. And then I just watched it and watched Raducanu completely dismantle her and Cerebres-Tormo completely go into her shell, not be able to stand up to it at all and get rolled over. Ultimately, that's what happened. And I just remember thinking, oh, and almost sort of like grabbing the desk, like, we need to hold on here. Like, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. But like, oh my God, this is going to be unbelievable. So I'm doing a big mention to that. Because that was quite a moment, I think, in the year of like, it was, you know, amazing what Emma did at Wimbledon. It was amazing what she was doing at the US Open. But that was a real like, oh, she's not messing around here. This is like levels, right? anyway, my award is given purely on quality of match. The quality of the Indian Wells final between second most improved player in Paola Badosa and the veteran Victoria Azarenka was off the charts. Good.
That was great, wasn't it?
Off the charts. The
phenomenal.
Level was insane. Just, you know, it had a bit of everything, didn't it? It was just absolutely extraordinary. You know, Badosa, a lot of people didn't really know too much about her. She'd been quietly going about her business and then she went, sod being quiet. This is what I'm going to do. And she was incredible. I mean, in terms of baseline hitting, I don't think you get better than that. The counterpunching, the aggression, you know, Azarenka was just not budging off the baseline. We know Azarenka loves Indian Wells and Miami. She does the sunshine double for breakfast. You know, it just, all of it, yeah, it was an incredible match. And if there was one match that I was going to watch back purely for the quality of tennis to be like, right, let's see the best of 2021, that's what it would be.
It was a good, highly recommended and a good choice there. And as I say, people listening would love to know your matches of the year. So that's it. We've got to nearly the halfway point of our Christmas special. I'm going to go and do some tidying up. As you're not going to lend me either your baby or these weird Hoovers that you're telling me about that you press a button and off they go, I'm actually going to have to get stuck into it myself. So... I'm going to go and clean up I'm going to get ready for Christmas. I'm going to wish you a happy Christmas and all our listeners.
Yeah.
Very happy Christmas.
Yeah.
And I hope everyone stays safe and well and enjoys their Christmas day wherever they are. And we are going to be starting, just to give you a bit more time to think, we're going to be starting our final pod of the year with, this is a cheery one, biggest disappointment of 2021.
Excellent. Well, I can't wait to get stuck into that.
Merry Christmas.
See ya.